Part 1, What Next for the SCLC? Tonight's guest, Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. We welcome two more new stations to the Night Call Network tonight, and these two stations are of special significance to the host because KPRS-FM in Kansas City, Missouri, is owned by Mr. and Mrs. Skip Carter, two very dear friends of mine, and in my own hometown of Philadelphia, WHAT. We welcome them to our Night Call Network. In the past month, all five of the major civil rights organizations have been going through major and sometimes painful reassessments of their roles in the Second American Revolution. Two of them, the Congress for Racial Equality and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, went through the public spectacle of open revolt by significant parts of their membership and leadership at their annual convention. The Urban League, most conservative of them all, publicly announced a total reversal of its policy as regards black power, in which the organization stated that it now agrees that any minority group was totally justified in using its economic and political power to reward its friends and punish its enemies. The new program director of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the most militant of the organizations, and the one which first popularized the term black power, also announced a major policy change with this official injunction to its membership, and we quote, "Be angry, but be smart," unquote. In effect, don't get yourself killed in a senseless looting or arson incident. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference, already in the throes of a leadership struggle to fill the void left by the murder of Dr. King, gave up its attempt to directly influence a reluctant Congress and shifted its attack to the economic area. This week, we devote all five of our programs to a look at the changing face of black leadership. Tonight's guest is the Reverend Jesse Jackson, National Director of the SCLC's Operation Breadbasket. It is a black boycott of white chain stores, which began with some 500 pickets at five Chicago A&P stores 3 weeks ago. Plans call right now for its spread to as many as 40 other cities in the near future. At the time it began, Reverend Jackson explained the philosophy behind it. The federal legislature, he said, had refused to face the poor people, but now they will be forced to face white power and white businessmen who finance their political campaign. So far, nobody, he said, is hollering except black people. But when these stores feel the hurt on their margin of profit, they're going to holler also. Reverend Jackson is standing by in Chicago to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about the changing face of black leadership. You may speak to him direct by calling Night Call, Collect at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311. That's national calls on 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls on 866-5010. Reverend Jackson, good evening, sir.
How do you do?
Thank you so much for being with us. We would like to begin our questioning and perhaps a statement. We sometimes forget when we start talking about who said this and did that among the black leadership group. But what it's all about is some 22 million black Americans. Now, is the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the Operation Breadbasket, really doing any good for any of those 22 million black Americans?
Well, the last 2 years that we've been here in Chicago, we've gotten more than 3,500 jobs that average about $7,000 each. We have challenged some of the more substantive jobs based upon our power, not simply upon our education. We've challenged the chain stores to put black products on the shelves for the first time in their history. The janitorial and garbage and exterminator services of the black service businessmen are used for the first time. We've challenged the neighborhood stores to put the monies in our banks, and our two banks have gone from $5 to $28 million in 1 year. For the first time in history, our black contractors are now building all future chain stores in the ghetto. So we've simply used our power, which is our capacity, to cut off or supply our enemy's need our capacity to cut off their margin of profit, and we've transformed that power into developing our community.
Reverend Jackson, this program, is this a part of the new black philosophy?
In a real sense, it is a reassessment of our relationship to white people, given the fact that we live in a colony. For many years, we sought the privilege to integrate, and now we're talking about the power to participate. The drive toward integration always was a drive away from pain, never was a drive toward joy. So we always knew that we had a lot of soul and a lot of beauty, but there's so much pain that one suffers in the colony that often people escape simply for fresh air. But there's a reassessment now, the whole question of black identity and black cooperation, where we're developing enough power to stand up now and make some of the power to be fall off of our backs. I think it's also significant to note that since we've been here, we have tried to integrate as persons rather than to participate as a people. When I first got started in the civil rights movement with CORE in 1960, while I was a student at A&T College in North Carolina, our analysis of the problem was social segregation. And we thought it was built upon prejudice. We thought that white people prejudged us and just did not know us very well. And the logical solution was integration to segregation. But a reassessment is that we are not just moral and social agents that this system sees as good and bad or good and evil, but this is an economic system. And therefore, the ghetto is a colony. And we stay in colonialism, and the systematic answer to colonialism has to be some form of independence that precedes any form of interdependence. Usually when I say this, people want to challenge that you mean separation. No, I mean independence. I mean very simply that the ghetto is already separated. That's why it's so identifiable. The question is, will it be separate and independent, that is, control its own energy and resources, or will it be separate and dependent? My position is that once it becomes separate and independent and has the power to determine its own definition of man and its own bargaining relationship, then it will gain respect within the economic scheme of things for black people far more than just being seen as good and evil. We are really seen as profits and losses, and assets and liabilities, and therefore it is my conviction that we must begin to speak in economic language because our adversary is economic in his nature.
You're credited with the following statement, and we're quoting, "No longer will we allow the colonial powers, the white owners, to take profits and leave poverty, to take joy and leave sorrow, to take our sense of dignity and leave only despair. Ultimately, the black ghetto must be controlled by black people," unquote. Now, to what extent are you seeking control?
Well, I mean, for example, right now we have a boycott going with A&P. And the reason the boycott is going on is very simple. There are 40 stores in the ghetto. There are 72 in Chicago. We want 40 managers, 40 assistant managers, 40 produce managers. We want to control the garbage at the 40 stores, the extermination, the janitorial. We want to build all future A&P stores. We want the money from the A&P stores to go to our two black banks. We want our insurance companies to do the insurance. We want A&P to advertise with a decent schedule in our black newspapers. In other words, they have production power, so they've built a store. We have consumption power, so we sustain the store. Now, the fair exchange that they can build and make a living at the store, we can too. But we will not lie on our stomachs and eat out of a hog trough while A&P lies on our back and eats on our necks. We're not going to curse them, nor burn them up. We're just going to stand straight up and make them fall off of our backs. We definitely see A&P as a colonial power. We are the colonized, and we can use our power, which is their motive, which is our margin of profit, to transform their behavior. If not, we can change the alternatives under which they make decisions in this ghetto.
Will this kind of program, the type of program that you're presently conducting in Chicago, will this spread to other cities?
We have 26 breadbasket chapters across the nation now. And the fact is that we're moving toward a political state of black nationalism. I don't mean black nihilism. I'm not talking about burning down a building. I'm talking about building up a nation where you got black people in 40 or 50 cities that can communicate and move simultaneously and collectively on a given issue. One of the great tragedies of our whole struggle in America is that we have been separated by superficial class barriers by complexion, by education, and geographically. And to the extent that we can see ourselves as a caste rather than levels of class, and to the extent that we can have intercommunication between the ghettos or the colonies, we will have national power. Nobody else during the presidential election has to run around wooing voters as our politicians are running across the country being political pimps for some front right runner. All the other ethnic groups have the power to get on the phone in New York and talk to brothers in California, Texas, Florida, what have you, and make a decision as an ethnic interest group. And this is the level of sophistication that I'm convinced that black people are moving toward in this nation.
Reverend Jackson, we'll begin taking our first phone calls of the evening. And our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Remember, if you're calling from out of town, we welcome your calls. Collect your comments and your conversation tonight on the changing face of black leadership. Our guest calling in from Chicago, Reverend Jesse Jackson. We'll take our first call from Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Treadway is hearing Night Call over WVOL. Your question, Mr. Treadway.
Reverend Jackson, my question is, one, do you foresee, what problems do you foresee in uniting all the black organizations with a common goal of aiding all black people? And if you see any problems in this, do you also see some possible solutions?
Well, number one, I think that all of us can have one interest, but not necessarily the same interest. And I think this is one of the areas that we've gotten thrown off down through the years. You know, the black doctor has an interest in spreading health, the black teacher in disseminating information, the black garbage man in picking up garbage, and the black preacher in trying to spread hope. And we have been challenged by white sociologists to have one interest, I mean, to have the same interest. Rather than one interest. And I think that if Ringer's dealing with the whole cultural question, for example, on the national scene, Coor is now trying to deal with a kind of indigenous ghetto thing, just so that there is a certain harmony and continuity toward our ultimate goal. And I think there's little disagreement now but that if black people are to live in ghettos, that we should control every economic and political facet. I don't think that's any longer a debate.
Look, one other question while I'm talking to you.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Now, what problems do you foresee in getting the so-called middle-class Negro to solicit the support and aid the person in the ghetto?
Well, the fact is, I think that that's a myth. I think that that is a, this whole attack upon middle-class black America is a diversion put in by American white sociologists. The fact is, all black people in this country are products of the American white society, whether we are extreme poor or whether we are pseudo-wealthy, that the American slave problem is still the black man's burden, all black men's burden, and the white man's shame. Now, the middle-class black that has been able to move economically has not really been able to move geographically, nor has he been able to move and push into his training. He does rise out of the pits of the suffering, but this isn't because he does not love black people, but because he does not enjoy pain, not as anybody. Now, I think the next thing has to be seen there. The few of us that can read or write, we learned it from black teachers. The majority of the black doctors that we do have in the country, they did come out of Nashville. The black musicians, I do not want to get hung up in trying to justify the activity of many of them who have these psychological hang-ups of wanting to be white. But I think that we ought to put the emphasis in the right place, and that is that the black colony problem in America is the white man's shame and simply the black man's burden at all levels. And the black middle class has always, some levels of it, been the forefront of the movement, whether it was Frederick Douglass, whether it was Walter White, or whether it was Du Bois, or whether it was Martin King, or whether it was Stokely, or Rapp, or Jesse Jackson, or Karenga, and the man, Floyd McKissick, or Jim Farmer, and the men that I've mentioned had what we consider middle-class qualifications, they just have a kind of universal compassion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return with more questions to Reverend Jesse Jackson, our guest tonight, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Reverend Jesse Jackson after station identification. In our city and state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension or see poverty as the real problem or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Reverend Jesse Jackson about the changing face of black leadership. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to more calls from listeners across the nation. We will take our next call from Jacksonville, Florida. Mrs. West is hearing Night Call over WRHC.
Thank you.
Mrs. West.
Hello, Reverend Jackson.
Yes.
I am Elizabeth West, and I understood the subject was we are the one that's hollering. We can't be optimistic about it because if we don't ask, they don't know we want it. So I agree with so many things that you have said that we are getting some, the avenue of being open yet. But it seems some avenues is not open yet. The trunk has been open. The trunk is supposed to be open wide and comes from the bottom to the top, right?
And I can't quite hear you.
That would give our children a chance. With the ice suffer long time ago, our children can't suffer like we could, right?
That's right.
We want to just the avenue open a little bit that the older folks can walk in it. Just for some, not a whole lot, but the children that can do, that we prepared to do. We want to see them with the opportunity and the privilege, right? And that's all we are asking for. And by the help of God, I pray that we all will look down and don't have any, you know why? Because we're supposed to travel the same road.
I can't hear you.
We're supposed to travel the same road, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes. And this is an avenue, it can't be closed. Now, and we are be optimistic about it, right?
I don't understand what you're saying.
I said this avenue won't be closed now.
What avenue?
It can't be.
What
the
avenue?
The avenue of opportunity. Right?
I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I'm asking on the question, the subject with you, started, you said that we are the one that's calling, right? We are the one that's in trouble, huh? We the one want the opportunity, right? If we don't ask and show them that we can, they won't know, right?
Yeah.
We are the one that helped them where they are today. I've noticed black power on TV, it's very true. I saw some things that I remember from a girl, which my grandmother was in it. My grandfather was, and they pulled people up from the ground.
See, my point about we hollering is that
yes.
In the nation right now, you see, black people are the only one with the intelligence and the integrity to holler.
Yes.
Poor whites are hurting just as bad, but the alternatives are a little different. That
yes.
is, poor whites can still stand on the shoulders
can,
of the
right.
poor black.
Right.
And if they holler too loud, they figure they might have to stand on the ground with us.
Yes.
Now, there are 40 million poor people in the nation, people making less than $3,000 a year.
Yes.
And they're numerically more poor white than poor black. Mm-hmm. And percentage-wise, more poor black than poor white, which means that we've got a double problem. The black people have a caste problem, racism based upon our skin color, like us. But we also are a black caste within the lower class. And the whites numerically are greater in number in that class than we are. There is a rebellion now going on the part of black people to break out of that class. There appears to be right now a kind of glorification of our class, of our caste, because we recognize that black people have so much soul. White people have little other than that they have stolen from us that we would even desire.
Yeah.
We don't want their music. We don't want their athletic skill. We don't want their brain. We don't want their frigid women. We have everything that we need.
Right.
But the only reason we have ever left the ghetto has been a flight from pain, because the viciousness of the military system within the ghetto, in a sense, makes it desirable for one to move where there's fresh air. But there appears to be a willingness now, rather than for the black people to escape the ghetto, to run the white police and firemen out of it.
Yes.
Thank you for calling, Mrs.
Thank
West.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll take our next call from New York City. Mr. Zeller is hearing Night Call over WRVR. Your question, sir.
Reverend Jackson, my question refers to an organization in Chicago called the Hyde Park Kenwood Support Committee for the Poor People's Campaign. Our organization helped you out a little bit anyway, starting with the building of Resurrection City and so on. We gathered some money, we sent some buses down. But after the closing of Resurrection City, it was very hard to keep the organization together. A lot of people wanted to drop out. A lot of people felt there was nothing more we could do and felt there was a lot of difficulty contacting the SCLC organization. Now, what can we do as a local community organization to help SCLC, to help Breadbasket, and to continue our support role and to keep people interested?
Well, of course, now that the majority of the executive offices are back in Atlanta, our address there is 334 Auburn Avenue, A-U-B-U-R-A-N, northeast, I think, care of Dr. Abernathy, Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Abnett has indicated that we are going on to the political conventions. I think one needs to see, in terms of the whole Resurrection City thing, that the purpose of SCLC, all the police campaign, is not to feed people, because we do not have the resources, but to sensitize to the nation to the fact that there are hungry people, to put it another way, to pull the cover off of a lot of lives. And what we found is that the racism that is apparent in the nation is caused by a basic problem, and that is a classical form of capitalism that is outdated and that is taking 30,000 jobs a week and making the rich richer and the poor poorer. Our victory is in the fact that a certain evolution of human consciousness and sensitivity took place in Resurrection City.
Right.
If you will notice, during the Poor People's Campaign, the issue shifted from how far we could throw a brick to how poor people are.
Right.
The issue shifted from the fact that people are unemployed because they're lazy to the fact that people are unemployed because of our economy. Eastland gets $13,000 a month not to farm, and children on his plantation receive $9 a month to survive, which means the children off of his plantation are literally run up to New York by the economic system to be frustrated in that great urban complex.
That's right.
And I think this kind of sensitivity is now indicated in presidential candidate speeches, and you know, people are now discussing the nature of poverty in an economic system that is not addressing itself to its primary responsibility. To that extent, we consider it a victory, and just by your continuing to discuss it in your neighborhood groups, challenging your local politician.
Do you think there's anything more we can do than just discussing? I mean,
but simply to raise the issue to the point that involuntary starvation in this nation should be a federal crime. Your local politician ought to take that position. If a minor in New York City or Chicago goes into a bar, and if he buys the liquor, the bar is closed in 24 hours or quicker, the little boy is accosted, his parents are arrested, which indicates a high sensitivity to minors and liquor. If that same boy goes into a welfare department and declares that he is hungry, then nobody is arrested and very few people are disturbed,
which means that we have a higher sensitivity to liquor for children than to food, which is an absurd kind of paradox in a nation of surplus. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So just to have your politicians deal with something this specific rather than the general hogwash and garbage that politicians talk would be to make a contribution to the whole sensitivity saying that we're trying to get to redistribute food in the nation.
I see. Thanks very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is NightCall in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, we welcome your comments and your conversation with Reverend Jesse Jackson tonight, and you may call us collect. We'll take our next call from Lanchester, Ohio. Mr. Briggs is hearing NightCall over WOSU-FM. Your question, Mr. Briggs.
Reverend Jackson has stated how far he feels the Negro community should go toward black independence economically. And I would like to know his views on how far the black community should go toward complete independence politically.
Well, I think that black people ought to, if they're going to be Christians as a religion, they certainly ought not be Democrats as a religion.
Yeah.
I think people ought to be intelligent enough to weigh issues rather than personalities. And I think we ought to respond to ideas rather than to a certain politician's game. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I do not think that we ought to have a super identification within a political party, but I think that we as a people and our allies ought to vote on those issues that are most humane universally and most germane particularly to the particular issues that affect our self-interest.
You don't advocate setting up a separate black state at all?
We already live in a separate black state. That's why the ghetto is so identifiable. The question
yes.
is, are we going to control it? Are we going to be controlled while we're in it? It is not our choice within the confines of the United States at this
True.
Point for us to have a federal state. That becomes no more than a dream.
Yes.
I think the fact is it would also be bad for us economically because as much as we have invested in this nation to run from our investment because we don't feel that we have the collective power to take it, would be to have worked 300 or 400 years for little pay and to have built a nation and to contribute this to America free. And I, for one, think that America is too much in my debt for me to run away without getting back some of the benefits.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Goodbye.
We welcome our first call from Philadelphia. Mrs. Congleton is hearing NightCall over WHAT.
Hello,
your question, Mrs. Jackson. Congleton.
I'd just like to know, I'm calling for a number of people in my area. Is there an Operation Breadbasket in Philadelphia?
Yeah, Breadbasket is being formed in Philadelphia, and the leadership will be largely coming from a group of ministers that are headed by Reverend Lorenzo Shepherd at the Greater Mount Olivet Baptist Church.
Oh, yes. Well, because we have been wanting to do something, and I didn't know whether it was covered. Is it still covered under SCLC, right?
Operation Breadbasket is the economic arm of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
Yes. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Our next call is from New York. Mrs. Gilman is hearing NightCall over WLIB-FM. Your question, Mrs. Gilman.
Thank you. My question has to do with the feeling I have for a long time that the trend in the black people's struggle is towards separatism. I feel strongly that... where none of us, neither black people like you or white people like myself, are going to make it anywhere unless we find some way of recognizing that I'm not going to make it without you and you're not going to make it without me. Now, the question then is how do we arrive at a way of accepting the fact that we have a great deal to overcome. And
well,
I'm talking about all my people.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me explain this to you.
Yeah.
Men and boys associate mm-hmm. as long as black people are seen as its and white people are seen as thou's. Men and men integrate. Black people are not seen by white people in this nation as men. Therefore, there's a certain inherent disrespect. In part, the disrespect grows out of the fact that we do not have the kind of economic power to affect the decisions in the nation. We have the economic power. We have just not
coordinated in such a way until we could bargain with the government to make certain basic demands. Now, we talk about black-white in the nation, but what we really mean is that the white community is not made up of just a European white group, but it's made up of many white ethnic groups, the Italians, the Jews, the Polish, you hear what I'm saying?
Mm.
And what have you. Each of those ethnic groups.
Reverend Jackson, I'm going to ask if you'll hold your answer for a bit. We're going to depart for station identification, and we'll be coming right back. Mrs. Gilman, thank you for calling.
Right.
Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Reverend Jesse Jackson after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
We're trying to bring about change in this nation through nonviolent channels. Now, if we cannot do it through nonviolence, there are other forces that are going to lead people down a violent path, and the nation will be destroyed.
Ralph Abernathy on apathy and violence. And a white industrialist says jobs will save us from a racial inferno.
It's better to learn and earn than to burn, baby, burn. Now, these are the changes in attitude that spring from the community as a whole to try to work with these people, not just work on them, and to have industry reach into the area and try to recruit and hire the guy that's qualified and to get the other fellow to take training so he, too, can get a job.
Speak for yourself on Night Call. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Reverend Jesse Jackson about the changing face of black leadership. Again, Del Shields.
And we welcome the Night Call stations who join us for the second half hour. And, of course, earlier in the program, we welcome KPRS to our Night Call network as well as WHAT in Philadelphia. We'll begin taking additional calls, this time from Memphis, Tennessee. Mr. Mitchell is hearing Night Call over WDIA.
Hey, Dale.
Your question, sir.
Dale?
Yes, sir.
May I finish answering that question?
Yes, you may. Mr. Mitchell, will you hold, please?
The question from the last call from Philadelphia really had to do with will we ever get together. And I was explaining that we live in a pluralistic society that is made up of many ethnic groups. Chicago, up until very recently, probably the best example, where the city treasurer here is always Jewish, county treasurer is Polish, the mayor is Irish, the postmaster German. In other words, each ethnic group has its own power base, the Roman Catholic Church, the Polish Catholic Church. Not only do they have local cultural powers, but they also have national cultural power and national holidays. They even have international cultural ties. They have never broken their cultural ties in their own country. Now, each of the ethnic groups in the nation has this kind of ethnic continuity except black people. The reason they do not expect black people to have it is that we are brought here under a colonial regime. We are the colonized, living in the colony, and the colonizers make profits off of us. When the colonized cease to be colonized, then the colonizer loses his job, and the colonist ceases to have any meaning, which means that the rebellion of black people in the nation, in a sense, economically, has the power to destroy the racist prerogatives upon which our nation is built. I think that once this is understood emphatically, and everybody in the nation has to stand on their feet and off of our backs, then this redistribution of power will simply create new relationships. That would be the only condition upon which black people would be seen by whites as equals, and that is the only time at which we will be equal.
Mr. Mitchell, your question, sir.
Why do you think Negro police in Memphis is carrying black people down to the police station and beat them? Do you think the police is Negro police low class?
Would you state your question again, sir?
Why do you think Negro police in Memphis is low class? Because they carry out black people down in the police station and beat them, and white too.
You send the black police tear black people down to jail and beat them?
Yes.
Because it was in the slave system, the house slaves get their promotions by their ability to show their kinship and love for the slave master and their disdain for their fellow slaves. Every time one black policeman gets a good reputation for beating black people, then he gets promotions. And the reason we say that the black identity movement is necessary, when he recognizes that his beating a guy may put a stripe on his arm, but it's also putting stripes on his back and his children's back into posterity, that he would rather not have the promotion and have his manhood than to have his promotion and still be a slave with a billy stick on his side. That's why the whole cultural revolution, the whole appreciation of oneself is so important. You would not be able to get in a Jewish belief to be whipping the Jews, not because Jews are superior to us, but because they have a sense of identity and cultural continuity that gives them too much pride to be beating one of their brothers just to impress some other European white people.
What did you think about black police brutality?
Well, I think that police brutality is built into our system. The police are set up to contain the poor and to extend the privileges of the rich. You've never seen a police, for example, drive through a slum neighborhood and see a building that had violations, breaking the city code, and then see them get out and write a ticket and start looking for the landlord. But as time is on, the young men get disturbed and snatch a window out of one of the raggedy buildings I've discussed, they lock him up. You've never seen the police go into a store looking for bad meat. Our police go into an all-black neighborhood where a store has all white employees and lock the owner on discrimination. Their role is not to protect the colonized or the poor. Their role is to protect the privileges of the rich and to stop the poor from rebelling.
Well,
that is just a fact.
Well, I've never heard they going out carrying the white people down there and beat them.
Huh?
I never heard they carrying any white people down there and beat them.
That's not their job.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay.
This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Tonight, the changing face of black leadership, our guest calling in from Chicago, Reverend Jesse Jackson, the National Director of the Operation Breadbasket. Our next call from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, Mr. Lynch is hearing Night Call over WBAX. Your question, Mr. Lynch.
Oh, I don't have a question exactly. I'm more or less with you. I mean, not with you. I have an answer.
Yes, sir.
And I want these people, I know you're nationwide or something like this here, but I have served in two wars. And because, all I want to tell the people, because these soldiers I served with black and white. And because they were black, their skin didn't stop the bullets. And I'm a Caucasian myself. And that is it. Them guys over there, they're doing their job over in Vietnam. And there's quite a few blacks over there. And they're doing their job. That's what I have to say.
Thank you for calling,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I might say that they're carrying the assignment, but they're not doing the job. Their job would be to save humanity and distribute justice, but they're killing people in underclad and unjust war. The fact is, not only are there quite a few blacks over there, we're 10% of the population, and it's 30% of us over there, which means that the draft system itself expresses contempt for the poor in general and for the black in particular. You'll find nothing in Vietnam but poor whites and poor blacks, while the rich boys go to West Point to direct them, and other rich boys go to college to analyze what the rest of them are doing over there. Now, it's tragic that the brother is so loyal and patriotic that he does not even have the reasoning capacity to see the slave system in some kind of total perspective.
Reverend Jackson, if we may return for just a moment to the boycotts that you're presently conducting in Chicago. Has the AMP chain, have they offered to meet with Operation Breadbasket?
with us 18 months ago and admitted that they owed us, based upon our consumption, 770 jobs. They signed a covenant. They only gave us 36 of the 770 jobs. We asked for 75 more meat journeymen. A&P lost 6. We asked for 44 more black truck drivers. They lost 3. A&P has 28 white supervisors, 1 black, 52 white secretaries, non-black, 363 office employees, 26 black, 161 meat department heads, 22 black, 323 butchers, 38 are black. In other words, this is consistent with the behavior of the colonists to come in and set up all these stores and bring the poor, uneducated whites to take the job that the educated blacks are qualified for. They cannot morally justify having this kind of relationship with us, and yet they're in an embarrassing position because some of the poor whites will have to get out of our jobs for them to make their adjustment. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And they don't want to talk with us because the issue now is not talking. We're either going to get our jobs or A&P will be off limits in the ghetto. There's no discussion.
Well, how do you answer the fear that whites have that blacks will take their jobs?
No, those are our jobs. The farthest door in the ghetto, those jobs belong to us. The question is, the whites who have our jobs, how much longer do they want to stand on our backs in order to establish that they're men? The other thing that's significant, given the racist mentality of the nation, if blacks are unemployed, we're passed off as apathetic and lazy. If the same whites are unemployed, it's called a depression. The unemployment rate in the black ghettos across the nation now is higher than in most areas, most white areas of the nation, during the depression of the 30s. But it's because we are hostile and stupid and ignorant, not because the economic system is failing for the poor at this time. You see what I'm saying? Therefore, even if black people just manifest enough power to force white people into crying about the small amount of jobs, Congress, by its relationship to white people, will react in quite a different way. If the majority of the people in the Poor People's Campaign had been white, President Johnson would not have ignored the Poor People's Campaign totally. But because the majority of the people were black, he expressed his contempt by officially disregarding us as a significant force in the nation.
We'd like to take a moment now to give out our phone numbers once again. Area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. And remember, you may call us collect. We welcome your calls, your comments, and your conversation. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Tonight, the changing face of black leadership, our guest calling in from Chicago is Reverend Jesse Jackson, the National Director of the Operation Breadbasket. Reverend Jackson, do you see that there is, going back again to the new black philosophy, do you see this new philosophy as hurting or actually helping?
Well, I think that what's good for black people is good for America. But what's good to white people is not necessarily, as the record would show, good for America. All that we're saying is that we want enough power to make certain that we have adequate hospitals in our community, which would eliminate the contagious diseases. That's good for the nation. All we're saying is that we want enough money in our educational system to cultivate our minds so that we will not be walking around illiterate and semi-literate in an urban world. That's good for the nation. All that we're saying is give us a job or an income. If the economy does not have enough jobs, then be intelligent enough to redefine what work is, because if men are not working, they're warring. We're saying that there is no shortage of minerals and resources, and there is no excuse for men being cold in Harlem in the wintertime when there's enough oil in the ground. We're saying that some of the political graft that has created the hunger tension at the bottom of the nation's economy should be relieved. So in a sense, we are a particular ethnic group, but our plea is a universal plea. That is that men should strive for justice rather than judgeships, and teachers ought to teach for life and not for a living. That in fact a new value system must come into this nation that transcends color lines. It just happens to be coming
from the mouths of black prophets, but it's good for the nation.
Reverend Jackson, we'll return with more calls right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Reverend Jesse Jackson after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. To Reverend Jesse Jackson about the changing face of black leadership. Again, Del Shields.
Sacramento, California, Indianapolis, Indiana, and St. Paul, Minnesota are standing by to talk to you, Reverend Jackson. We'll take our first call from Sacramento. Mr. Rosenbach is hearing Night Call over KERC-FM. Your call, sir.
Yes, Reverend Jackson. I have a question. I'd like to compliment you, first of all, on the infinite knowledge that you seem to possess. In the past few minutes, you have expressed yourself as an expert on employment, politics, capitalism, slavery, psychology, human behavior, action and reaction. The war in Vietnam, you stated it's unjust. You stated the draft system is unjust. You have, seem to have an infinite knowledge of the viewpoints of all white people, and that you speak in terms of all white people think this, or all white people think that. You're an expert on poverty, morality, and on top of that, you're a reverend. My question
is, how
do you achieve such knowledge?
Hey, that's pretty nice, isn't it?
I would like to know how you achieve such knowledge living in this depressed system in the United States.
Well, number one, I'm a victim of... Hello?
Yes, he hung up. Go ahead, Reverend.
All right. Number one, I'm a victim of capitalism, and so are most poor white people that just don't realize it. Number two, I have lived across the street from poor white people, so I got a pretty good insight on them. I have worked for rich white people and waited tables for them and cleaned their babies, so I got a pretty good insight on them. I know what human behavior is going to be like because I'm a human and I behave properly. And I think I've been here probably because I have the capacity to love everybody. I'm not an expert on psychology, but only to the extent that I know what neurotic behavior is and what healthy behavior is. And one, all one has to do really is to be able to pull together the sum total of most of his experiences and at one level or another, all of the various fields that you cut across, one can observe is if he has a discerning eye. I don't just write it down the highway looking. I also sit down sometimes and see some things. And I have sat down and I have observed the behavior of our nation. And I am, I must tell you that part of my concern grows out of a real deep love for our nation and a pity for the sickness. Our nation 10 years ago was a hero to many of the poor nations of the world. Now everybody sees us as a big bully. We are fast becoming the most unpopular nation in the world, seen as the arch anti-revolutionary force. And I do not think that it's good for the nation or for the people that's caught up in the nation. And there is no justification on earth for starvation in a land of surplus. And poor white people should not react, because if there is any adequate redistribution of food in the nation, they'll be the first one to get it, and they will get the most of it. And they need it the worst.
Our next call, Reverend Jackson, is from St. Paul, Minnesota. Mrs. Rasmussen is hearing Night Call over KTR. KTRS-FM. Your question, Mrs. Rasmussen.
Well, first, Reverend Jackson, I want to commend you on that answer that you just gave the person who called from Sacramento. That was just marvelous and the answer of an expertise, and thank you for it. Then I would like to say I would certainly like to know how to organize an Operation Breadbasket in the Twin Cities.
Well, incidentally, I was there speaking at the Hilton Hotel for the Minnesota Open Convention Saturday night. We have some contacts there, but I wish you would write our office here in Chicago.
Yes.
At 366 East 47th Street. Operation Breadbasket of SELC at 366 East 47th Street, Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Mr. Dozier is hearing Night Call over WTLC-FM in Indianapolis, Indiana. Your call, Mr. Dozier.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Jackson, what part does he feel that the militant groups are playing in the upheaval that's in the country, and how necessary he thinks they are, and in his opinion, how do you go about determining what force you have to use in order to, be recognized or heard or understood?
Well, I think the real question is, what do you consider militant? Because cursing does not constitute power. And any time that you must move an object, you must always develop a method that has a relationship to the object. If the problem is an economic philosophy, then there is no burning solution to that economy. If we're here in the ghetto without the military, then to burn up where we have to sleep certainly is the ultimate solution. However, on the other hand, one has to be able to appreciate the brute and candid honesty of those who simply cannot take the lies of the system anymore and who do not have the patience to wait for some evolutionary process. I do not think that they, in and of themselves, will ultimately bring in the change, but they have certainly heightened the sensitivity of the whole nation. I think that any great movement of peoples has its left wing, its right wing, and it has its creative synthesis in the middle that pretty well pulls from both sides. And I think the movement has to be saying the total perspective. I do not criticize any black man's honest attempt to do what he sees to be a way out for him. I personally am committed to nonviolence philosophically. I did not always achieve it emotionally, but I recognize that man's drive to survive is stronger than his drive to be ethical or moral. I'm nonviolent not because I'm afraid of white people or black people, but because my analysis is that if the world's problem is overarmament, then one must develop an antidote to that problem, which is disarmament or nonviolence. Frankly, I think that violence historically has not solved any major moral social problem. Plus, the psychological change that the violent person has to go through in terms of developing enough hate to destroy the human personality, to me, is simply not worth it. However, for people that find themselves in that fix, if it is consistent with a genuine desire to bring in justice, then I can buy it. I might say in closing that even those who have been burning have basically been rebelling against property and not against person, and even if they have burned, they have simply still been crying, we want justice, we want better schools, we want swimming pools. One boy in Watts was saying, he ran past the police, we ignored him, and he cursed and said, shoot me or do something but recognize me, which is an indication that we want to walk out of our anonymity and be seen as somebody. So you're really talking about the groan of a people who have been suppressed far too long.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York, and Reverend Jackson, a question to you. Many people call during this Night Call series, or have been calling during this series, and it generally gets to one fundamental thing. There are many good white people and many good black people, but addressing ourselves right now to the good white people who ask, where does one begin? How does one start to make the necessary change that will help to improve the lot of the blacks in this country?
Well,
I think we must recognize there are two basic problems. White folks got a, black folks got a material problem because white folks have stolen the resources from us and enslaved us. But white folks have got a spiritual problem because the lies that they had to tell themselves in order to make us niggers have gotten them in a trick because they have lied themselves. It's bad for black people to be suppressed so bad until we have become niggers. But it's even worse for the man who took his military resource to make us be the kind of creature that many of us have been transformed into. I think that the white community ought to look at racism as the sickness and the disease that it is and challenge themselves by their own behavior as to whether or not they can swim in the ocean of humanity or whether they would remain in a white pond. That's a very basic issue. Where one stands emotionally on open housing has something to do with whether or not he wants to swim in an ocean with all men or whether or not he wants to remain on a white island. That's a basic thing. The next thing has to do with challenging his particular politicians to make hunger in his county or area illegal. Thirdly, to be intelligent enough on our economy to know that a redefinition of work is in order, not just more jobs. Our economy, because of cybernetics and the technology, we're losing 30,000 jobs a week. So you give us a million jobs, you divide it by 30,000, and you still will not have it very long. Just to, you know, deal with the whole question of schools, not only having good schools in terms of buildings, but in terms of a content that will make a new man. Now, I'd like to close by saying, Dale, that simply to feed more people in the nation and give us more houses, without the whole nation looking forward to a new value system in terms of priority and importance, to still be futile. If a young boy wants to go to law school, he ought to do so because of a fierce drive to distribute justice, not a selfish drive to get a judgeship. If a young man goes to medical school, he ought to do so in order to distribute medicine and to rid the community of disease and bring health, not to get personal wealth. That the teacher ought to get the psychological satisfaction of disseminating information. In other words, he ought to teach for life and not for a living. The new actor should not play pictures that are in conflict with his character. The whole cowboy Indian lie, the whole glorification of Tarzan movies, the whole glorification of violence as a way to solve men's problems, that the new person would stand up with the kind of principle that say, I will not do anything that breaks the harmony of humanity.
Reverend Jackson.
Lastly, Dale, is that we should express as a nation an intoleration of violence, but not just in the streets of New York.
Reverend Jackson, our time has run out. We thank you so much for being with us tonight on Night Call.
Okay.
Wide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, The Changing Face of Black Leadership, Part 2, The New Militancy of the NAACP with Chester Lewis. He led the revolt at the NAACP convention. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.